Let's take a look at the cosmic weather forecast for the year 2024. I'm talking Jyotish, Vedic astrology. Welcome to the Vital Veda Show. I'm your host, Dylan Smith. I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner, holistic health educator, and made up of light photons. That is what the study Jyotish is about. Jyotish is Vedic astrology, and it acknowledges that everything in this universe, everything on planet Earth, including you, yeah, I'm speaking to you, are made up of light photons. What else is made up of light? The planets. So the interaction between the planets, the moon, the stars, the constellations, which we call nakshatras in Jyotish, and us, and the activities that we are conducting, the energies, the collective consciousness in the atmosphere. This is how Jyotish, one way that Jyotish interacts with us. And today we have one of my favorite Vedic astrologers, one of my favorite Jyotishis, Laura Plum, to speak with us. And why I love Laura is because she has a broad holistic view on the Vedic sciences. She's an Ayurvedic practitioner and a Jyotish practitioner. She's director of VedaWise and different schools of teaching Ayurvedic nutrition, Ayurvedic cooking, yoga therapy, decades of study in these Vedic sciences. And ultimately, she has the intention to promote radical health and sacred, sumptuous living among people. And we did a podcast with Laura in 2022. For forecast of 2022, I highly recommend that you listen to that. I listened to it the other day, and there's not one thing which is not relevant for now, and it will continue to be. And that's episode 76 on the Vital Veda podcast, called Vedic Astrology Forecast 2022, plus Great Truths of Light, Jyotish. And there we speak also about how this astrology actually significantly, accurately, precisely interacts and influences us. So have a listen to that. At the end of the show, I'm going to share more episodes on other listening of Jyotish. But enjoy the show. We speak about the forecast. We speak about what's going on in the Middle East, which started in October 2023, some crisis which has rippled throughout the world. We speak about digestion. We speak about eating disorders. We speak about a bunch of stuff, eclipses a bit. So have a listen. And if you enjoy, let us know what you think. And for those also listening, Happy New Year. I want to wish you a Happy New Year 2024. I really hope that you can ride the energies and be in tune with nature's cycles and the subtle cycles that is going on in the cosmos, which Laura speaks to and speaks about, and how you can align with those for you to have a year with the least amount of friction and the most amount of flow, the most amount of wisdom, abundance, whatever qualities and energies that are relevant for you as your unique self. In 2024, we have my teachers, my mentors, the Raju family, who are one of the few families, or one of the handful of families left that have an unbroken lineage of Ayurveda, and they're coming to Australia for offering healing services as well as offering educational services. We're doing a retreat for on advanced Ayurveda. Even if you're new to Ayurveda but have a foundation in regular daily meditation and are familiar with the Veda, whether it's just through meditating or through studying the Vedic sciences, we have an international retreat happening in the east coast of Australia at the end of April 2024. So as well, they'll be offering the famous banana therapy and consultations, Vedic astrology, Jyotish readings as well across Sydney, Melbourne and northern New South Wales east coast. So if you want to learn more, you can go to vitalveda.com/Raju-April-2024, or just go vitalveda.com.au. You'll see about the Raju family visit this April 2024. And if you want to be in the know of these visits, because some things have booked out and some things will be booked out by the time you listen to this, get on the Vital Veda newsletter, and then you're going to know about all the special events that are happening. And for that, it's at the top of vitalveda.com.au, or you can go vitalveda.com.au/subscribe. So that's one of the things happening, which Laura speaks about, is happening after a radical Mercury retrograde and eclipse. Was it a Mercury retrograde? Maybe some transition, some significant transition in April 24. And that's literally the first day that my mentors, these Ayurvedic doctors, start consultations in Melbourne on April 9th. So have a listen. Hope you enjoy the show. and let us know what you think. Leave a comment, leave a review, tag, share an Instagram story. I want to hear what you think, and we'll reply there, Laura and I. Okay, much love. Welcome back to the Vital Veda podcast, Laura. So good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
It's been a couple of years, pretty much exactly. You were on 2 years ago when we were doing a forecast for the 2022, the year of 2022. Mm-hmm. And now 2 years later, we're doing a Jyotish forecast, a Vedic astrology forecast for 2024. I re-listened to that the other day and it was extremely relevant. So I highly encourage anyone to listen. It was a really good episode. And the first question I started there, which I'm going to ask you again, because for listeners, and this was so good and so powerful. So what did you do today? What is your Dinacharya?
Yes, I was thinking of that. I was thinking about how you asked that last time. And I was thinking today as I was doing my Dinacharya, the answer is probably the same.
Yes, I want to hear it again.
I wonder, is that because I'm so consistent? I don't think so. I think it's because I love it so much. So to this day, every single day, I start my day with warm oil, Abhyanga. I just absolutely feel like that's the non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, what else? So warm oil, full body Abhyanga, tongue scraping. I like to get oils in the ears as well as the mouth for the oil pulling. Neti wash, I'm finding I need that every day. Just got to clear out the nose, especially because I'm speaking to you where it's winter for me and it's very dry here. And then I actually would say these are the five non-negotiables. The final one is my pranayama, which again in the winter I'm finding to start with some good Kapalabhati breath or Bhastrika, something to warm the body and encourage circulation. Mm. So those are my basics.
Beautiful. And we were speaking about last time how every day you'll put oil in your hair, which is really wonderful for someone having long hair. And good dedication. And you were saying, you know, it's not, the benefits are much better and it helps the hair health. And it's not too hard, not too aggravating. Last time, 2 years ago, we recorded on a full moon and it was full energy podcast. It was like really a lot of enlivening energy. It was a wonderful one. Now we're recording on the new moon. The new moon is tomorrow. So I would like for you to let us know, how do you personally interact with new and full moon in your life?
So we are actually speaking on Amavasya. So you're right, the new moon's coming. And the day before the new moon is the Amavasya, which is the dark moon when it's coming back to the sun.
Let's just clarify that, because I meant dark moon, and I don't know about US, but in Australia, a lot of people call dark moon new moon. So we should be calling it Amavasya. So that is the name of when the moon is dark moon, means like no moon. So it's really the very beginning of the moon about to wax. And grow.
Yeah. I mean, I just love yoga, Vedanta, Ayurveda, Jyotish for this, because I just always, everything is so integrated and so whole. What I mean by that is, don't you love that idea that the moon is currently waning, right? And we're getting less and less of that reflected light. We're getting less and less of that energy. And it's calling us in, and it's calling us in. And finally, that dark night of the moon is such a deep and beautiful invitation to come home to yourself. Right? The moon has come back to the sun. The queen has come back to her king, right? She's coming back to re-energize, to get her light, right? Mm-hmm. What is the moon but the reflection of the sunlight? So she's coming home to the sun. She's going to rest for a moment. Such an invitation for us to do the same. And before we rush into a new moon and that new energy, let's take a pause. I love that. It's like winter before spring. And that's where we are speaking right now. We are speaking at that beautiful pause point. And I feel that's so appropriate for you and me.
Yeah.
I think you represent that well in terms of your work and your living expression.
Yeah, it's just, you know, in those who know Ayurveda, we do daily routine, like I asked Laura about her daily routine, and then seasonal routine. But we can increase our sophistication of the rhythms of nature and new moon and full moon is something that I'm sure a lot of listeners are doing. But then when you learn more about Jyotish, there's much more to the panchang or to the calendar of the planets. And we'll maybe get a bit of a forecast of it for this year. But yeah, it's funny because I was listening to that episode the other week and we spoke about eclipses, we spoke about Jupiter energy, we spoke about Laura's lineage of gurus and traditions, we spoke about the Jyotish view on the pandemic, the Australian bushfires, and a lot more. And even though I was listening to it about a week ago, it was really good, I must say. And by the way, it was actually one of the most, it was a very popular episode. And I'm just like, this is going to be so different. I could already feel it, you know, recording on the Amavasya. I was like, wow, how am I going to kind of get, I'm not going to be that energy that I was. Like, I was really full power. Maybe it was also because in the midst of COVID and everything, I'm having this new guru about to happen. So I'm excited for this more established in our silence and pulling back the bow before firing into the full moon, before firing into that more extrovert waxing energy. So yeah, take a step back and look what we got for the year ahead.
Deep breaths, everyone, right? And what I love is that you and I both have a similar moon, and that's where the moon is today as well. So we're getting a moon crossing, a sort of lunar return, you could say. And I love what you said about as we get more sophisticated with Ayurveda, we start to tune in more to these lunations and these lunar cycles. And that's what I like to remember about Jyotish. It's sort of an expanded look at Ayurveda.
Absolutely.
Because if we're learning through Ayurveda how to live in harmony with the elements and the powers and energies of nature, well, that's nature too. What's the moon doing? What are the planets doing? And they're all having an impact upon us. They're having a gravitational pull, electromagnetic pull, right? And so it's really about learning how to harmonize with energies we can't see, right? We can see earth, we can see water, we can hold it. So these are invisible and intangible energies, but they're every bit as important and strong.
Yeah, it's so, of course, to mention that you are both an Ayurvedic practitioner and a Jyotish practitioner, an astrologer. And yeah, it is that extra expansiveness. And I was thinking about it today, and I'll just share. Like we've got a lot of friends who are Jyotishis, and basically, even though I don't know so much Jyotish and my wife knows maybe a bit more than me, like, we just always talk about it, and they seem to like, they're very good at analyzing people, and they like to just comment on everything in life with Jyotish, like whether it's a person, whether it's something that, like, everything Jyotish is coming into the conversation, into the circumstance that we're currently going into. And especially when you're amongst, you know, we've got very close friends who are Jyotishis, and we're always together, and they're just constantly, it's like they know, they have a knowing, they have this greater knowing, that extra, not greater, but that additional base, that additional body of knowledge, which is they're utilizing in the circumstance or in the social interaction, in the relationship, which they always bring. And then it's always brings a notion of accuracy and precision. And yeah, so I'd love to hear like your personal experience of you seeing Jyotish in every second of your life.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting point that you say, and I hope that people don't feel now nervous to meet us because we're going to be analyzing them.
They're still human. They still have their mistakes, but they just have that
extra. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I do feel that the Vedic sciences have at their heart deep compassion. So there's empathy and compassion and the seeking to understand, not to judge, but to, again, weave ourselves back into the oneness and the whole. Right, to know how to work with these energies so that we can have a more sacred, sumptuous life. But what I often will say to clients is we don't necessarily describe a person. We don't describe a person by their sun sign. So people will say, you know, I'm a Capricorn or whatever, I'm making something up. And first of all, Jyotish would probably make you a Sagittarius, so you might be a different sign in Jyotish. But also we're not really going by the sun signs. It's not to say that they don't matter at all. They do. But Jyotish is much more looking at your rising sign or your ascendant and your moon sign. And why is that? Well, Ayurveda would look at the rising sign because that gives prakriti. But that gives your outer self. That gives a vehicle for this atma in this lifetime. And it also sets where all the planets will fall, into which house, meaning where planets as energy will be wanting to act out in your life. Are you going to be somebody who's really interested in a career or more interested in children, marriage, health, different things. The houses represent different things. And then the other thing, of course, is the moon. And the reason the moon is so important, if you think about it, is that yoga philosophy, the Vedic system is really looking at the mind, right? The mind is the source. Even we say that in Ayurveda. So many of our diseases are actually starting here in the head, in the mind. Not to say that they're made up, right? That's not to say that, but just to say that if we can heal the mind, there's a good chance we can heal the life. And so Ayurveda gives us a really great lens, you might say, microscope almost, to be able to see how a person thinks and sees and feels and interprets their everyday interactions in life. So we're more likely to say, and then even then we're not going to say, oh, if that person's moon is in Capricorn, again, we're not still calling them a Capricorn. We're much more likely to describe a person by the planet that is most demonstrable or expressive in their chart. So we're much more likely, I like to say it like this, if we're at a geotish conference and there's a few of us talking and we see a friend come in, somebody might say, isn't she just the perfect expression of Mercury? Or can't you just see the Saturn in the way they walk, right? You know, or isn't that just like living, walking, breathing Jupiter coming our way?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So we're much more talking about planets than signs.
Yeah.
And then we're much more interested in rising sign and moon.
So yeah, let's get into the 2024 podcast. We're recording this very close to where we're releasing it in the beginning of January 2024. And of course, for those listening down the track right now, we're in the midst of kind of like a world war. Well, not world war. There's a crisis in the Middle East, which we got a lot of questions on Instagram when we asked about the Jyotish 2024, about is the global heartbreak stemming from the crisis in the Middle East, which is causing division all around the world. So we're in the middle of that right now. So that's one thing you can touch on. But overall, what else is 2024? We got questions on the themes. We got people asking they're personal, like what is it going to be for me? Like, well, I don't know your chart, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Why don't I start with the overall themes? Why don't I go through some of the high points and then we can go to the questions. Can we start there? I'd rather start with something upbeat than with a war.
Yes.
Although I really feel that yes, absolutely. There's been global heartbreak. How well put that is. Mm-hmm. And I guess I could even start there by saying 2023, well, we started, you mentioned that we talked in 2022 and the global pandemic was March 2020, and then it went for a long time in Australia, especially Melbourne. Certain parts of Australia really had a long, long lockdown. And then you guys had those wildfires, thinking back to that. I guess I just wanted to remember that for all the listeners, because I'm sure I don't need to tell anyone. We've had a few really tough years, you know, starting in 2020, 2021, 2022, and even 2023 started out well, but a lot of the things that we experienced in 2023 seemed to kind of go south in about July of six months ago. And so Venus was very stressed starting in July of 2023. We had all the fire planets pile up in a fiery sign in October, like October 5th. And then what happened in Israel was October 7th. And this pileup happened in the rising sign of Israel. It's hard to run a chart for Palestine because there's so many different birth dates for the place. And I've done that. I can come back to that if you guys want. But I think just to say the general trend, all of that was happening. Venus was stressed. Jupiter was retrograde and stressed. And those are the two great benefics. And then the malefics were all piled up in a way that they were promoting, you know, fiery conflict, let's just say. And we saw it. And we saw it not just in a certain region of the world, but we saw everybody seemed to kind of, like, it just was a wildfire. It seemed like it got everybody caught up in it. So then, you know, November and December, we had Mercury retrograde. We've had, again, still some issues. The good news is that Mercury went direct on January 1st, and no planets are retrograde. Apart from Mercury was retrograde when everybody woke up on January 1st, but by the time we went to sleep, Mercury had gone direct. And I just want to also say, of course, we're talking about a Gregorian calendar. We're not talking about the lunar calendar, the ancient Vedic calendar. But we are talking about a date and time that people have agreed to. Just as you might give me your birth details, and I'm going to run a chart for that. So that's still according to the Gregorian calendar, and it's still effective, right? So if we've all decided that January 1st is the beginning of the year, what I like to do is to run the chart. So I run the chart for where I live, January 1st, midnight and 1 minute, right? So 0001. And for everyone in North and South America, the year was born when moon was in Leo in a nakshatra called Purva Falguni, which is ruled by Venus. For everybody east of that, so from Ireland and England all the way to Australia and New Zealand, the chart was also moon in Leo, but for you guys, it was in Magha Nakshatra, M-A-G-H-A. And so the Magha Nakshatra is a nakshatra that's ruled by Ketu. Just as with the 2023 New Year, the year started with a Ketu overarching sort of energy. Moon in a nakshatra ruled by Ketu for most of the world. And Ketu is two things, our past, our blindness, right? And I know that doesn't sound good, but I'm going somewhere good. Our stuckness, our illusions, our, you could say, past conditioning, places where we trip and fall and can't see where we're going. But those are the exact things that cause us to stop one day and say, how can I do better? How can I live better? How can I be better? And that's what Ketu ultimately is in the chart and in the zodiac. The whole zodiac begins with Ketu ruling. So the idea here is that the purpose of our life, the purpose of coming into a zodiacal place, time-space continuum, is for Ketu to do its work upon us. Ketu ultimately represents moksha. Ketu ultimately represents the yogi who seeks to go within in order to cultivate an inner light to be able to finally see truth, to see beyond illusion and to see reality for it, for what it is. And so for most of the world, it's again, as 2022 was, it's again a Ketu year. So great, you guys have another year to grow your spiritual mind, your spiritual practices, your spiritual life. Those of us in the North and Southern Americas, we have Venus ruling. So Purva Falguni is a nakshatra the moon was in when our new year was born. And that gives Venus, which we also had in 2022, which is why I predicted that America would not go into a recession as many were predicting it would. And that's a very political game that people are playing. The people who don't like our current president want everyone to believe that we're in a recession. Job numbers are bad. Inflation's up. And so we just have to keep trying to look beyond that. And the truth of the matter is we had a Venus year, focus on love, beauty, wealth, creativity. And so it's the same for North and South America is under this Venus this year. Great time for cultivating your relationships, cultivating harmony, good time to learn Ayurveda and grow Ayurveda because Ayurveda comes under the auspices of Venus. But it's also a good time to continue to awaken that idea of the divine feminine, awaken all that we think of as Venusian qualities. And then everyone else, it's K2 time, continuing to grow your spiritual practices, continue to release those external, material, even social distractions. K2 is about come inward, know thyself, and live that. So it's quite beautiful if you're a yogi. That's an overall theme. Another big important theme of this year is the outer planets are stable. Outer planets are Saturn and Jupiter. Outer planets are really important when we're looking at an annual forecast, whether it's global or personal, because the outer planets take a long time to get around the sun. Jupiter takes a year, and Saturn takes about 2.5 years. These are averages because everything in nature is dynamic and constantly changing. Saturn was 3 years in Capricorn, January 2020 to January 2023. Late January 2023, Saturn moved to Aquarius. And Saturn will stay in Aquarius until late March 2025. So we're right in the middle of this Saturn being here in Aquarius. So one thing that's good, there's no transition there. Again, you know, through Ayurveda, transitions are vulnerable points. So if the outer planets can be stable, that leaves a little less vulnerability as we move through time. So Saturn will stay in Aquarius, currently in Chaturbhishak, those who know your nakshatras, and then moving to Purva Bhadrapada. Jupiter is in Aries. Now, Jupiter, I mentioned earlier, has been very stressed, was very stressed in 2023, was stressed in 2020. I mean, Jupiter's been through it. Jupiter is called in Sanskrit guru. So Jupiter represents growth and expansion, guidance. advice, wisdom, our higher self. Jupiter is the invitation to listen to the inner wisdom, but also to grow yourself up into your highest self. So when Jupiter is strong, there's hope, there's faith, there's momentum, there's ideals, there's, you know, love for humankind. There's a sort of spiritual thread that runs through the world. People are more kind. People are more awake to the possibilities for living together in good ways. So Jupiter in Aries is strong. Jupiter has been in Aries since April of 2023 and stays in Aries until May 1st of 2024. The issue is Jupiter was retrograde until December 28th and had Rahu in close conjunction. And Rahu and Jupiter are enemies. And so that really kind of tied the hands of Jupiter. Now that he's free, Jupiter's bringing through the blessings. I think of him as like a golden river, right? Think of a golden shower from heaven above pouring down upon you. And anybody who's Aries rising or Aries moon, you especially are getting this 4 months of blessings from Jupiter. So go for it. Cancer rising also has Jupiter in the 10th house of profession. Everybody's got the good Jupiter energy, but those are some that have it particularly. So Jupiter's in a great place this year and moves to Taurus May 1st and will stay in Taurus until May 14th of 2025. So good news for Taurus moon and Taurus rising and, you know, people who have any kind of a strong placement in Taurus or a strong planet in Taurus. Jupiter's in a good place. I just wanted to say the other important thing for this year is the nodes are not moving. The nodes are the north node, south node, they're lunar nodes. They are what causes eclipses. They moved last April into Rahu, the north lunar nodes in Pisces, south lunar node is in Virgo. They will stay this year. You know, it's an 18-month transit for them. So this whole year they're staying. So the malefics, Saturn, and the nodes are stable. Again, it's a bit like a fire with a wind coming behind it to be unstable, right? Or unstable. So stability is what we want for those malefics. The benefics, Venus and Jupiter, are strong and free now to bring through their blessings and their good energy. So I'm really buoyant for this year. I'm really optimistic. I'm not saying that there's no, you know, there's going to be eclipses. There's going to be a Saturn-Mars conjunction. There's going to be things. Mercury's retrograde is going to be intense. Each of the Mercury retrograde periods this year are going to be very intense, more than usual.
Why is that? Why is Mercury retrograde intense?
So there's a thing that happens with planets that transit. So you're thinking about all the planets in the sky as they move through the zodiac. They all go forward, and they actually all always go forward. Planets don't go backwards, but we call them retrograde because to the naked eye, it looks like the planet's going backwards when what it's actually doing is coming closer in its elliptical circuit.
I like to explain it like cars pass driving together. If one car is going faster, it looks like the other one's going backwards. But
God, that's so brilliant. I was parking my car the other day and I was backing into the spot. And then I stopped and I had my foot on the brake and I kept backing. And I was like so frightened because I was pulling on the handbrake and I was pressing on with my foot and I couldn't stop the car. And then I looked up and I realized the car next to me was pulling out. And I thought I was going backwards. That's a great analogy. Thank you. I'll remember that. Okay, good. So the other thing that happens is that whenever a planet, so you think about the sun going from Pisces to Aries. Pisces is a water sign and Aries is a fire sign. So planets, especially fire planets, which is the sun and Mars, especially in K2, the south lunar node, especially when fiery planets cross from a water sign to a fire sign, it's called Gandanta. So Gandanta means the end of something is knotted. There's a knot in that ending transition. And it depends on the planet, how long it takes to get across. But, you know, for the sun, it's about 2 to 3 days either side. For Mercury, he's a faster moving planet. So it's more 1 to 2 days either side. Mainly it's the day that he crosses. So what Mercury is going to be doing is he's going to be going from Pisces to Aries, then retrograding at 3 degrees, Aries going back pretty quickly into Pisces, and then going direct and going back across. So we have 3 Gandanta movements by Mercury. And one of those is Mercury retrograding Gandanta, and to add to that, going into Pisces, where Mercury is debilitated.
So it's like extending that Sunday period, is it? Like that transition?
Absolutely.
So like what Laura said earlier, like when planets are transitioning. It's, you know, it's things happening. It's the same in Ayurveda with the seasons transitioning. We need to be careful when we're more vulnerable. But when the planets are stable in their sign or wherever they're going to be placed, it's everything's more stable. Okay.
Can I give you a couple of dates just for people to put in their calendars?
Yeah.
Because that Gandanta date where Mercury is retrograding back into Pisces, Venus will be in Pisces, and Venus is exalted in Pisces. So remember, Venus is one of the great benefics. And when she's exalted, it's brotherly love, you know, agape, compassion, high artistic refinement, right? Lots of love and harmony and imagination and intuition and hope for the world, you could say. So that is really a good safeguard. Venus will be in Pisces. So I'm talking about April 9th in where I am. It might be April 10th for you guys. I would have to look that up. But just think April 9th and 10th. And don't worry, I'm going to expand these dates. So you can go April 8th to April 11th, everybody, if you're going to put these dates in your calendar. So April 9th will be a day where there's a serious Sunday with everything that Mercury has to do with. And since it's going from Aries, which is a fire sign, to Pisces, a water sign, you know, Pisces will give some emotional sensitivity, but Aries will give some fire, saying things in a very direct way, you know, trying to get the job done, not worrying about how people feel about it. And so people want to be very careful on April 9th about communications, about negotiations, even anything that where you're using your intellect. I think it's a great time. We always say when the planets are in a difficult place, when they're stressed, it's a great time for us to be non-stressed. Stay home, relax, you know, go get some Ayurvedic treatments or do some meditation. Eat light, you know, stay sweet. And if somebody is grumpy with you, just blame it on Mercury.
Right? It's funny. That's the very date that we're starting. My teachers are coming from India and we're starting an Australian tour. I think it's literally on the 9th. Well, it's a bit after that, but they arrive then. So, but then again, that's like to have Ayurvedic treatments, to have the consultation stabilize. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing we want to do. When the light outside of us isn't as strong, we turn inward to the light within that is always strong and never can be eclipsed. But that's what I wanted to say. April 8th is the date that we're having an eclipse. You all can Google it. It's April 8th for me in California. I've written the dates down here. April 8th. Yeah, so I've got April 8th is, I think it's April 8th everywhere, is a solar eclipse. So we have a lunar eclipse, March 25th. We have a solar eclipse, April 8th. April 9th is when Mercury goes retrograde Gandanta. And April 10th, Saturn and Mars will be conjunct, exact conjunct. Saturn and Mars are planetary enemies. And so April 10th will not be a good day to be in any area where, you know, there's geopolitical conflict. So if you're thinking about traveling to a place like that, I wouldn't be there April 10th. If you have people in your life who are prone to anger and sudden irritation and flashes like that, stay clear of them on April 10th. April 10th is an important time to absolutely stay chill, meditation, relaxation, right? So you can see that they're one day after the other. We have a solar eclipse. The sun will be eclipsed, that light within, right? Important time to come in and know that this inner light can never be eclipsed. Then communication, travel, negotiation, those things will be so-called, you could say, eclipsed because of that Gandanta retrograde. And then the final day, April 10th, is Mars and Saturn will be moving closer and closer and closer towards each other, you know, 10 days on either side of that. So to answer the question about what's going to happen in the Middle East, I would have to study the charts really, really closely, and I haven't done that. I think that, you know, the problem with what happened in the Middle East, the problem with what was going on in the sky when that happened, is that, you know, there's no help from the benefics. There was no help from Jupiter or Venus. Venus is an ambassador, right? Jupiter guides us to our better selves. They weren't available. While K2, Mercury, Sun, and Mars were all piled up together in Virgo and then Libra, and then we had a solar eclipse. It was really a chaotic time. It was a car wreck. Oh, that's not happening this year. But April 8th, 9th, and 10th could be a mini version of that. So, yep, let's do our prayers and let's really pray for peace. But for people individually, just to remember, those are the days to put in your calendar. You know, what if it's a work day, take the day off, stay home, rest, journal, paint. And don't worry about what the rest of the world is doing. And don't worry if other people get mad. Turn off your phone. Okay. Those are really important times to do our practices.
Beautiful. As always with eclipses, good to do that.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with you and your teachers.
Yeah. Well, I just looked. Yeah. So the eclipse is, it's saying on the 10th. Yeah. Surya Grahan. Oh, sorry. On the 9th.
Yeah.
But what time? I don't know. It might be early in the night or something. But yes, we do start consulting on the 9th. That's the first day of seeing patients. So.
That's brilliant. That's beautiful.
And I'm glad you told me, because if I booked a flight on them on the eclipse, they would not be happy. They would ask me to change it.
We don't want to do. Yeah. So I've got April 9th for, no, that's late. So it must be in the morning.
I can't see the time.
I just looked up. I have to pick a town. But.
And then again, it doesn't give me towns, because it's saying it's not applicable. Well, it's not visible in Byron Bay where I'm living.
No, it's actually visible in the US. We're going to be able to see it here in Central and North.
Yeah, what's your view on that? Because, you know, they say for someone like us in Australia, if it's not visible, it's still there, that energy, but perhaps not as strong.
Yeah, you know, I think so. An eclipse is an eclipse, and the eclipse energy will be most impactful in the place where it's visible. One thing that's interesting is that whether it's a partial eclipse or a full eclipse, this will be a total, both a lunar and a total solar eclipse. Total or partial, they're still strong, and it's important for us to stay inward. I was in India in October when we had an eclipse just a few months ago, and it was a really beautiful place to be. I went out and saw the moon early in the evening, and then at 3 a.m. was the eclipse, so I made sure I went home, and I just went to sleep, slept right through it. You guys are going to get your eclipse. This April 9th eclipse for Sydney, at least, is 6 a.m.
Okay.
So great to remember. Don't get up and go watch the sunrise. Okay. And for all of you, you know, maybe you just, whatever time you wake up, stay in, and you don't go out until later in the morning or something. But there's nothing better than Ayurveda at that kind of a time.
It's a beautiful time, 6 a.m., because you can just meditate and keep doing your practice inside your home, as we advise. And yes, to learn more about eclipses, definitely listen to the previous episode with Laura. We spoke in depth about that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I think the main thing is that Jupiter's in a good place for people. Venus is not stressed at all this year. She was so badly stressed second half of 2023. So we've got the benefic planets. And if you think about Venus as love and the heart and Jupiter as your higher self, I would invite your listeners to really think about, what do I want to give to that energy, right? What would I want to plant in a really fertile soil, right? If it's going to be a beautiful, sunny season, what do I want to see grow by the light of that sun? Those are some things to think about. Because we really have had some challenging years, challenging, as we know, in terms of worldwide events, but the skies have been challenging. To actually take some time to think now, you will now have the benefit of better energies. You will have the wind at your back, right? That idea that the universe has got your back is true. And it's true for everyone. It's especially true for some, depending on where these planets fall in your chart. But it's an important thing to think, I think. I think if people have had a tough time, the mind starts to believe in that. And so I want to invite people to believe in you and believe in what you're capable of for this year.
And we can. That's what I love about Jyotish. You can be more specific than just, okay, it's going to be positive, but you can say, okay, Jupiter energy, what does that mean? What is worthy, and what will nature support in me doing certain things? Like, it's Jupiter, okay, I'm going to do more study or teach. And it's Venus, I'm going to do more of feminine activities or towards abundance, like that. So you can be specific. I love how you mentioned earlier about, do you want to say anything about that?
Just that I know some people who are launching their yoga teaching school this year. I know different people who are doing different spiritual courses. And I just think that those of you who are in Australia and New Zealand, this is a great year for that. if you have an inclination to go study with Dylan, or if you want to, you know, go do a teacher training in yoga, or you want to learn Jyotish, or you want to, you know, whatever meditation you want to do, this is a good year for that, for everyone, but especially those of you.
Yeah. And the guru, did you say, is that till May 2024? What was the...
Oh, that's the thing I wanted to mention to you. Jupiter goes to Taurus May 1st this year and stays there until May 14th of 2025. Mm. So a year and 10 days. What I wanted to say is that this year also started out when we cast the chart for January 1st. Saturn is currently in Aquarius, has been now for about a year, is currently in the nakshatra of Shatabhishak, and Jupiter is in Aries, currently in the nakshatra of Ashwini. Now, Shatabhishak is a really beautiful star. It's actually ruled by Rahu. I think it's Rakshasa. It's an interesting star in that just looking at it from the outside, it doesn't suggest that it's as brilliant as it is. It is a star of one whose head is always in the sky, whose eyes are always full of stars, who is always looking up to wonder at the world and how it all works. And so it's said to be the star of scientific breakthroughs. And in fact, Jupiter and Shatabhishak have had a beautiful relationship in the charts of people like Marie Curie or Thomas Edison or Nikola Tesla, literally people who make important breakthroughs that advance human life. And so that's where we have these two planets right now. The two outer planets were the great professors of the sky, who are the most impactful on us because they take longer to get around the sun. Therefore, they stay longer in each sign. Therefore, they have more time to dig deep, right, and to impact us. These two planets, Saturn is in Shatabhishak, and by the way, and in Aquarius, which is a sign where Saturn was when the French Revolution began. Moon in the U.S. chart was in Aquarius when, you know, America was born. And so that Saturn in Aquarius is really important for people power, right? Power to the people. Leaders listen to the people, right? Listen to what the people want. It's about equality and fraternity and liberty and justice for all. That Saturn in Aquarius can be quite revolutionary, even though it's not seeking violence by any means. No, Aquarius is very much a humanitarian, loves all people. We're all equal. We should get along, right? Loves to learn about the diversity and the differences in each person and respect everyone for who they are. Respect and dignity to all is a very key Aquarian concept and theme. And then inside of that, we've got the Shatabhishak, where Saturn is right now, making scientific breakthroughs. And then on top of that, we've got Jupiter in Ashwini inside of Aries. And Ashwini is a celestial physician. Ashwini, the Ashwini Kumars, give us Ayurveda. So this is a great time for medical breakthroughs. This is a great time for Ayurveda. Anybody thinking they want to learn Ayurveda, go experience Panchakarma, sign up for that tour that you're doing with your teachers. There's really cool energy right now, just these first few months of the year, because Jupiter will move to Bharani. It'll move to the next nakshatra soon. Later in March. But we've got the first 3 months of this year really supporting positive advancements for humanity.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And yeah. If someone is Aquarius or has Ashwini Nakshatra, because I loved how you spoke about how those who are Taurus, you know, after May, it's going to be a lot of Jupiter energy for you, and that's a really good time for you to expand. And I think it was Aries that is currently with Jupiter now before Taurus. How's that for people who have an Aquarius, whether maybe it's their rising or their moon, and also with the Ashwini Nakshatra, if that's their constellation? Is that
right? So whenever you have any kind of a return of a planet, it's going to accentuate that planet's energy. And it's also going to begin, you could say, a new cycle, just like a birthday is a solar return. It's the beginning of a new year for you. Jupiter return is every 12 years. Anybody who's got Jupiter in Aries is now experiencing a Jupiter return.
Okay.
Anybody who has Aries rising is having Jupiter cross your rising sign. And then anybody with an Aries moon has Jupiter crossing your moon. So Jupiter as a planet to cross the rising sign. Well, if this was your birth chart, you'd be considered very blessed. Anybody born with Jupiter in the rising sign is considered to be very, very blessed. So even the transit of Jupiter across the top of your chart, the high point of your chart is always the rising sign. And the rising sign transit will give, Jupiter is giving blessings to your health. If you had health issues, Jupiter's maybe helping you find the solutions, finding the right doctors or protocols. Jupiter is also going to be, in a way, causing you to be seen as a wise person. People will be seeing you as somebody who has guidance, right? So they may be turning to you for advice or sort of things. It's basically just going to lift the whole chart up, right? The rising sign again is at the top of the chart. So it's almost like you pick it up and the whole thing gets a lift. Jupiter crossing the rising sign also means that Jupiter's aspecting a direct drishti, a direct aspect to the seventh house of marriage. So marriage is either better or it's a time when you might meet a marriage partner. And also Jupiter's aspecting the fifth house of children, but also of creativity, education, higher education, and creative performance, and bhakti yoga. And then it's also aspecting the ninth house, which is the house of our spirituality, our belief system, atmavichara, sort of soul fulfillment. So it's a great time for Aries to be cultivating both their bhakti and their jnana yoga practices. Mm-hmm. It's a great time for them to be putting energy into their relationship because that will be rewarding, and a great time for them to be focused on their health. And be careful, stay away from Jupiter foods, which would be rich, indulgent foods. Mm-hmm. Just be careful of that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And so all of what I just said about the moon is true as well. If Jupiter's crossing your moon, if you have an Aries moon, you may feel like you've got wings, right? You just could fly, like you just feel so uplifted. And Jupiter will be aspecting the seventh house from your moon, so also good for marriage, happiness, domestic bliss, all of the above.
Love it. So wonderful. And of course, if you also want to study Ayurveda, Laura's doing a course on January 20th, 2024. So very soon as you're listening to this. And that's a live course, which I really appreciate working as a group.
Yeah.
And we'll have the link in the show notes, but it's vitalveda.com.au/VedaWise. And I saw like it's weekly classes with you, Q&As with you weekly, and mentoring, group learning. And so... Yeah. You can teach so many things because you have so much bodies of knowledge in the Vedic sciences, and you're doing this Ayurveda integrative nutrition consultant training. So why nutrition, Ayurvedic nutrition, have you chosen for this?
That's such a great question. Why that? I think this sort of is an inner and an outer answer to that. The outer answer is that 73% of Americans have complained to their healthcare practitioner about digestive disorders.
Yeah.
73%. And then you think, how many of them didn't complain? How many of them haven't spoken up to a healthcare professional? So that's an epidemic.
Yeah, I would say
that's a problem.
Over 90% experience it. Yeah, if you add the non-complainers.
Yeah, right. So then when we look at Ayurveda and we look at what Sage Charak said, he says that Agni, which is your digestive fire, is the source of all wellness. And that the majority, if not all, diseases have at its root digestive disorders.
Yes.
So, I think it's a real problem. People don't know what to eat. The more information we get about what to eat, the more people are confused. Yeah. And they're experiencing that. Their belly is confused.
Yeah.
From an internal place, when I was a teenager, I stopped eating, kind of. I was anorexic. And I think there's something about deciding to starve yourself because you don't deserve to be nourished, or because it's just a stress response. And that's why I call it Ayurveda integrative nutrition, because we also really want to address the subtle body, the mental body, the emotional body. And we bring in practices to help digest difficult emotions. Right? We know that the body digests best when we rest, because that's where we get the saying rest to digest, right? And so that's why, you go to an Ayurveda center. First of all, the food is so easy to digest because that's going to help the body rest. And then the restful practices are going to help the body digest. So much transformation happens when you're spending a week or two or three at an Ayurvedic center, because your body is so deeply resting, and that deep state of relaxation spontaneously causes all that healing to occur, even the healing of deep traumas. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like my own experience of digesting life as well as digesting foods, because I have also had a lot of digestive disorders thanks to my travels in the world, and then also just knowing what we know about Ayurveda, it's, to me, the study of Ayurvedic, it's basically a course on Agni. And the Agni is, to me, the central engine of healing. So
yeah,
I find it, they're all great. Herbs are great and Panchakarma is great, but this is a this is something that we can all do and that we all need.
100%. And it's the root, as you say, you know, there's the shloka in there, but it says, sarva piroganam eka karanam mandu analaha. And it is that all diseases, like sarve is all, the roganam, all the disease is from eka, one cause, karanam.
Cause.
And that is the low or poor digestive fire
or
agni.
Yeah.
So I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I just, when you mentioned eating disorder, you just sparked a light in me, in my heart, because to be honest with you and the listeners, it's one of the most challenging things that I see in my clinic, challenging for me and challenging for my patients. It's really, and obviously I see them in so many different stages. I more commonly will see mostly women who have had it in the past and definitely still have it to some degree, or remnants of it, or have it quite a bit. It's a lot more challenging when they're right in the midst of it, which I also see. But definitely there's a lot of things that help them. I primarily work with the nervous system, but it's extremely common. And I'm so happy that you're doing a course that's related with it, because I think to have you who's gone through it, and to have your energy as well, like this beautiful Venus energy, this beautiful, like, nourishing, and it's really good as a group. So I would love to hear you just touch on what I would like to know about is, like, Jyotish related with eating disorders and just that in general. Well, we've done a few episodes on it as well. Just on eating.
Yeah, have you? Well, yeah, no, I love what you said about eating disorders are really difficult. They are just difficult because it isn't about just changing the diet.
No.
And I'm talking about whether it's somebody who's got excessive eating disorder, right? Or too little,
right?
Or back and forth, right? With the binge eating, there's all kinds of ways that this shows up. And also it's difficult, it's sensitive too, because we don't in any way want to say this is the size a person should be, or this is what a person should be eating.
Right.
And that's what I love about Ayurveda. Again, it comes from a place of so much compassion. It's really, do you feel content? Do you feel comfortable in your body, and do you feel content in your heart, right? And if the answer is not absolutely, how can we support you in getting to absolutely? So I love that you do that work, and I just agree with you so much. That's one thing that I've really looked at a lot of, is how can we, that's why, again, I call it Ayurveda integrative nutrition. It's not just about diets, recipes, meal plans, straightforward consulting. How do we really support people? Because, you know, you said mostly women, so many people in these wealthy, you know, developed nations are nonetheless malnourished.
Mm-hmm.
We have all the food in the world, and yet truly we're emotionally, spiritually, and physically malnourished.
Right.
And we show signs of it through all kinds of anxieties and certain disorders. So, but to answer your question about Jyotish and nutrition, or Jyotish and eating disorders?
Eating disorders. Yeah, I mean, I see it as a lot, obviously, I'm treating a lot the mind and the nervous system. That's the primary thing I'm treating. So perhaps you see it with the moon. I don't know. Like, yeah, I'd love to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was just going to say, it's for sure we're going to see something to do with the moon. And we're either going to see a moon debilitated, or we're going to see a moon stressed by Saturn conjunct or Saturn transit. Could be Rahu conjunct or Rahu North Node transit. Could also be Ketu. I haven't seen it so much with Mars, but any of the malefics, which are Saturn, Mars, and the North and South nodes, Rahu and Ketu. And you know, that leaves just about everybody's moon. I mean, if you think about, the moon can be conjunct or aspected by Saturn from four places. There's 12 total places, and there's four possibilities to be aspected or conjunct with Saturn. And then there's the nodes, which can be another, let's just add another two. And then if we add Mars, and I'm just doing that in a simple way, and if we add Mars, there's another four. And now we've got 10 out of 12 placements. And then if we add that the moon can be debilitated, that's 11 out of 12 potential placements. Why do 11 or 12 people not have, 11 out of 12 people not have eating disorders. It's kind of like that in a way. But it's the degree in which the planet is stressed. So the degree to which it is debilitated, or the degree to which it is aspected or conjunct a malefic planet. And usually it's Saturn is the one that does it, because Saturn is very Vata in its aspect on people. It dries you out. At the same time, it feels very heavy. Mm-hmm. It feels very stern. Like that strictness of not eating, that's Saturn's. And I will not eat. That's Saturn. Mm-hmm. And Saturn makes you skinny and hunched over. And it's all so Saturn. And then some voice in your head that says, how dare you eat? And you don't deserve to eat. And you don't deserve life. And you don't deserve nourishment. Scrooge is such a character of Saturn.
And the obsessiveness, is that also, where does that come from? Is that a Saturn thing? The obsessiveness?
That could be Rahu. Rahu is more obsessive.
Okay. Yes,
true. But Saturn's very controlling.
Controlling, so
is it controlling or is it obsession? And those are sort of overlaps. Mm. But Saturn would be the controller. Rahu would be the obsessive one, or the obsessive influence. And then, it may be that it gets triggered because you're passing through a Saturn Sare Sati period, a period where Saturn's crossing your moon.
Yeah. And you said 11 out of 12. Well, the reason is that not 11 out of 12 are experiencing is because I guess you got to also look at, how's the moon being supported? Is it in a good sign? Is it with another planet which is helping that? Would that be right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not a simple science. Yeah. It's complex as we are, right? Yeah. It could be, it's not just how's it being supported, which it is for sure. It's also the degree to which it's being stressed.
Right.
Right. And then what are the transits that are happening currently in your life? Are you in a Saturn dasha? Are you in a Rahu dasha period? Mm. Is Saturn transiting your moon, right? Which is a 7.5 year period. Mm. So, we all have our ups and downs in life. And we can all look at it and say, life's the ups and downs. And Saturn, Mars, and the nodes explain that. Right. So there's certain times where certain things get triggered in us. That's why I love Jyotish, because it is a Vedic science. So it always offers practices to support you through these times.
Right. I have a question from one of our audience. It's a fun question. And the question was for you. It's like, Laura, what is your favorite part of Jyotish? And it's hard to say favorite, but I think I don't really like to use the word favorite, but whether it's a thing which really comes to mind and which sparks you.
Yeah, my favorite part is I love working with clients, and I love the aha that people get when we start looking at their chart. I'll never forget the first time I looked at the chart of a total stranger, and I was asked to do it by a client, student of mine. She said, this person's having so much trouble, will you look at her chart? And the person got on the phone. We didn't have Zoom in those days, and I didn't know what they looked like. I didn't know anything about them, and they weren't forthcoming. And by the end of saying what I was seeing, she's in tears. Hmm. And that was when I knew I could trust Jyotish fully, And I'm not trying to bring people to tears, but she was in tears of relief. Hmm. She felt seen. She told me that. She said, I feel seen. I couldn't even see her with my eyes. She felt seen. Hmm. And that's what I love so much about Jyotish. I think it does really see people. It is called the Eye of the Vedas. Hmm. And it sees you for who you truly are, which many people have never experienced in their life. Many parents project onto their kids their own life.
Right.
It could be their life hopes, their life expectancies, right? But it could be their what they want for their children, but it could also be their disappointments in their own life. Like, it's amazing. Now that you're a parent, you might see it, not in yourselves, but in like other parents. And so a child is growing up inside that projection. Mm. And that's not being seen fully.
Right.
And then if your parents aren't seeing you, and your school's seeing you all as a bunch of third graders or fourth graders, you're 30 kids in a class, they don't have time to see you individually as your own special, unique self. Mm. So it's very beautiful to have people feel seen, because that does ignite something, that ignites the Atma, that ignites that potent part of themselves that just bursts forth.
Unleashing that potential, unleashing that light. That's the value of a parent getting to know the chart of their child, right? They can nourish certain aspects and give room for certain aspects to flourish and be aware of, I may be imposing, whether it is whatever, for however that imposing looks like. Maybe it's just you doing your thing around the child, but knowing, okay, hold on, actually, this child has a different energy or is inclined to express themselves in a certain way or move in a certain area of life. So just be wary of that. Be mindful of when you're doing your thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. And even people might say, well, I did martial arts when I was a child. It was the best thing for me. My kids are going to do martial arts. Mm. Okay. But what if they're here to do football or yoga or ballet, or they're real intellectuals and they have no interest? It's nice to look at the chart and have a better understanding so you don't feel you're failing. It's also that. Mm. So that you understand your relationships with your child. It's very, very helpful.
And it's very fresh, right? It's like, just not my ever repeating known how I know and I've lived my life for all these years and how I was brought up. It's like, wow, I got to actually consider an independent individual and I have to open up to something, a new way of being raised as a child and raising a child. Yeah, it's that.
I remember somebody saying, you know, we don't feel like we're ready for a child. I don't feel like we can afford it. And I looked at the chart and I said, this child's going to bring you abundance. Mm. And 10 years later, he came back to me and said, that child brought us abundance.
Wow. Yeah.
So that you're opening up new energy. You absolutely are. And you want to make room.
Yes.
That's beautiful.
So anything else you want to mention for 2024? And maybe can we do like a summary as well? Just a quick summary.
Yeah. My summary is that it's a better year than we've seen. The planets are in better positions. The planet Saturn is in dignity in Aquarius, and he will stay here all year, right? Jupiter is in a great sign, completely free to shine his blessings in Aries until May. He's not as strong in Taurus, but still that'll be a nice shift because, again, Aries, you know, we've had Rahu in Aries, we've had Jupiter in Aries, and Aries is the general. So it'd be nice to calm some of that war-like energy down and put him in Taurus, which is very calm. So that's the main thing. The outer planets, there's less instability, there's more stability. That's better for the planets. The two great benefics are free to deliver their good energy. And the malefics are a lot calmer this year, I want to say, except for some of those dates I've given you. So I'm not giving you all the dates for the whole year, just knowing that the Mercury retrogrades will be a little bit more, you know, bouncy. So just take them seriously, especially if they're transiting your sign, right? So Mercury retrograde in April is, what is it? It goes Aries. Is April 1st to the 25th, and that starts in Aries and moves into Pisces. It's your Jyotish signs. So if you have Mercury in Aries, or if you have Moon in Aries, or Aries rising, you might feel it more than the rest. And especially the Gandanta, you'll feel it. Mm-hmm. Mercury, it retrogrades August 4th and 5th, depending where you are in the world, until the 28th. It goes Gandanta August 21st. And then it retrogrades November 25th or 26th, again, depending where you are in the world, until December 15th.
Wow.
No Gandanta.
Three times. Amazing.
So three times with two major Gandanta periods. And remember, Gandanta is forward, back, and forward. So watch the retrograde periods. I think those will be the main ones. And definitely watch that Saturn-Mars conjunction. And then also, if you are Pisces, the eclipses are happening in Pisces and in Virgo. So if you've got Pisces moon, especially, then this year is the year you've started Sati. Saturn's begun his crossing of your moon, and you've got Rahu on your moon. So especially for anybody listening who knows for sure they have a Pisces moon, again, Jyotish sidereal system, this is a good, important year for you to, you know, beef up the support, beef up your spiritual practices. Don't believe anything your brain tells you, especially if it's negative. Right? Sleep, any decision you have to make, sleep on it for a full moon cycle, right? And make good decisions, right? Be discerning, cultivate discernment, cultivate vivek. You know, Pisces is the opposite of Virgo, right? Virgo is known for its vivek. Mercury is the planet of vivek, of discernment. Mm-hmm. So for Pisces who are known for their intuition, their imagination, their compassion, this is a year to cultivate your discernment. Make wise decisions so that you're not going to have to pay the consequences. It's only Pisces, and I don't want to suggest for Pisces it's not going to be a great year, because Jupiter is in a good place for Pisces this year. So you could have really, really great experiences and great highs. But Pisces has that beginning of Sarasate, and it's the beginning of Sarasate plus Rahu on the moon, where you really want to be making sure that your decisions are clear and check them with your trusted advisors, right?
How long does that Rahu sit on the moon for during their Sarasate?
Yeah, so Rahu is currently in Pisces. Rahu's transit is always 18 months.
Okay.
Rahu came onto Pisces April of 2023, so about 9 months ago, and will be in Pisces. Rahu, the North Lunar Node, will be in Pisces until November of 2025. So we're right in that. This okay. 1 year, it's not going to change.
All right.
And then K2 is in Virgo, the same period. They're always moving together. Mm-hmm. Saturn is 2.5 years in each sign. And so when Saturn currently is in Aquarius, he's in the sign before Pisces. So if you have a Pisces moon, Saturn is currently in the 12th house to your moon, the sign before. So Aquarius, then Pisces, and then Aries. Mm-hmm. And each 2.5 years adds up to 7.5. And Sarasate means 7.5, the 7.5 year transit of Saturn across your moon. And so, yeah, for Pisces people, that has begun.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much, Laura. So again, if you want to have a Jyotish consultation with Laura, it's lauraplumb.com, right?
Yep. And PLUMB.
PLUMB. And if you want to check out the course, which is starting January 20th, which looks so good, vedaveda.com.au/vedawise. And yeah, like start this year with that guru energy, that unveiling the darkness with the light, and the light of knowledge, and the yeah. torchlight of yeah. wisdom and health. So thank you so much, Laura.
You know, it's interesting, just to finish, the moon when it's in Scorpio is considered debilitated, and you can just feel it, can't you? I feel it as you're finishing and wrapping up here. You can feel the waning debilitated
yes.
moon. So everybody get a good rest and get ready for the new year starts with the new.
Yeah, well, they'll be listening to it on the wax.
But the moon will be debilitated.
Oh, okay.
At least once a month. So everyone exactly. can just keep an eye out. When is the moon in Scorpio? Pay attention to that. If you feel that you do notice a pattern of feeling more tired or even some sadness, you know, just low energy, then you can, that's information for you. You can plan your life around it.
Mm.
That generally is true, that there's just less energy, less nourishment, right? We feel less full. We feel a little maybe just fatigued and burnt out.
So good. And that's such a good value of knowing your chart and just expanding the sophistication of your relationship with the cycles of nature. And I really recommend people. And it takes... You know, if you've found this overwhelming, I've been there. So bit by bit, it's lifetimes of learning, and it gets this sophistication. It doesn't mean complexity or overwhelming. It means just expanding your capabilities to mm-hmm. relate with these cycles mm-hmm. and aspects of astrology. So, and it's so nourishing and fulfilling. So bit by bit, keep learning and increasing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's not let our curiosity is great, it's a beautiful gift, but let's not let it get the better of us. Always remember you are a star.
Right.
And that within you is an eternal light that can never be eclipsed. So bit by bit, we just continue to expand that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Laura.
Blessings to you, Dylan. Honor to be with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
you too.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for listening. Do you want to hear more of Laura? Check out episode 76, the Vedic Astrology Forecast 2022 plus Great Truths of Light. And you can hear more of Laura. That is a different energy episode. As I said, it's full moon energy. It's a full power episode. There's a lot in it, and there's so much. It's all more than relevant for right now. You want more episodes on Jyotish? Episode 41, Jyotish Celestial Organization of Life with Vedic Astrology, and that's with Blaine Watson. And episode 49, again with Blaine Watson, another revered astrologer, that's on karmic relationships, why am I single, and past lives with Jyotish. Then episode number 3 is Jyotish Vedic Astrology with Anand Mehrotra, another Jyotish practitioner who has a radical approach. And there we basically go through the planets and speak about their qualities. And last episode to refer you to is on eating disorders, and that's episode 100. And it's called Healing Mental Health Epidemics and Eating Disorders with the World's Largest Love-Based Movement in Human History. And that's with Nicole Gibson, number 100. Not a specific Vedic approach, although it's very Vedic what Nicole talks about, but it is a phenomenal episode. So there are some resources for you. If you want to check out Laura's course, go to vitalveda.com.au/VedaWise and enjoy. And if you, by the way, if you listen to the first podcast episode with Laura that we did, number 76, you'll get a discount code for a Jyotish reading with Laura. All right, my friends, let us know what you think, if you have any suggestions, but embrace for the 2024. We've got a wonderful year lined up. We've got continuing our research into Kundalini. Kundalini is this dormant potential energy in the human physiology, which sometimes can manifest, this spiritual energy can manifest in a radical way. It can awaken in a radical way, which can startle people. And I'm currently on a research project because I've seen some patients who have been absolutely startled. They've been overwhelmed. They've been told they're crazy. And common people would think that they need to go to a psychiatric ward. So to prevent this, I have started this project of making sure that these people are heard and seen, as we spoke about with Laura, and giving them tools to ground themselves and integrate these radical experiences. So you can listen to the recent episode we did on Kundalini. And then after that foundation of Kundalini, which I shared a couple of people's experience, personal experience with in that episode, we're going to have people sharing their story from all walks of life, people from all walks of life. And we have a phenomenal one coming up with Marcus Hamill. So make sure you subscribe to the show, because we don't promote it in many other ways than just being on the show. So subscribe. We've got different episodes coming up. We have one with Vijay Krishna, who is an amazing Kirtan practitioner, chanting of mantras, a very upbeat musical musician. And that includes some music. So subscribe, get ready for 2024. I hope you, genuinely from the bottom of my heart, I hope you have a peaceful, a radiant 2024 with more love and peace and abundance. Much love.